Hi everyone, welcome to Baby Steps Nutrition, a podcast that focuses on nutrition, health, and wellness for families of children of all ages and stages. I'm your host, Argavon Neil Forouche, a pediatric dietitian and mom of two young children. My goal is to bring you impactful information that you can apply every day in a simplified, practical form to make life easier. Now let's get into today's conversation. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming back Gabrielle Nicolet, a speech-language pathologist with over two decades of experience working with families and children. Gabrielle is executive director and owner of Speech Kids, a coaching program for caregivers, as well as a parent coach and educator at Raising Orchard Kids. Gabrielle was a recent guest on the Baby Steps Nutrition podcast, where we discussed speech and early childhood development. This time, we are discussing early childhood experiences as it relates to all children, specifically Orchid Kids. Hi, Gabrielle. I said I'd have you back on the podcast, and here you are. Our warmest welcome back.
Thank you so much, Argavon. I'm so happy to be back.
We have so many things to talk about. These are my absolutely favorite topics. So let's get started.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's first start with, we hear a lot of terms, labels. I know we discussed some of these on our previous conversation, but what is an orchid kid and how do they differ from kids who are called dandelions?
So the term comes, if you go on the Googles and type orchid kids or orchid child, there's like a Swedish term comes up that roughly means orchid and or dandelion kids. And then Thomas Boyce, who's a developmental pediatrician, wrote a book called The Orchid and the Dandelion. And his research was based around adverse childhood experiences, which I know we're going to talk about in a second. And he sort of was looking at the data and realizing that, yes, the number of adverse childhood experiences affects kids, but it affects some kids more than others. And these are the ones who are, let's call them, highly sensitive to their environments, more reactive to certain circumstances or stimuli in their environment. So they're responding in an outsized way to the things that are happening to them. And so when I read this, first of all, I was like, aha, because the kids that I deal with have developmental and or speech and language difficulties, which I would argue should qualify them as having an adverse childhood experience. Now, you know, again, we're not talking necessarily, although we can, talking about poverty, abuse, neglect. Those are the ones that are in the ACEs bucket. But if we're looking at it through this lens of what in the environment is acting upon children, certainly a developmental disability is doing that. So to the extent that this is happening to them, that's where then I come to, okay, these are orchid kids, right? Anybody who's experiencing an environment that is challenging or a mismatch for them, those are the ones that I'm calling orchids. And many of them are very, very sensitive, again, to what's going on around them. And they need things to be, you know, a certain way.
And I think the beauty of working with all children and really paying attention to, yes, there are certain basic necessities that all children need, but it's really these extra sensitive children that teaches so many things about what I feel like has been missing in traditional or old school thinking, and that all children are resilient, right? A lot of us grew up with that mindset. I know I still hear that, like, it's fine, kids get over it, they're resilient. But now there's been so many studies and attention that's been given to, well, right, there's the right kind of experiences that can teach your kids those things like we all want, grit, resilience. But then there are these traumatic experiences that can have lifelong impact. And so it's not necessarily these big trauma subjects, but it could be other things that are going on a daily basis. And so this is why I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, one of those things, if I can just jump in, is, you know, think about for a child particularly who has a speech and language difficulty, right? Your caregivers are not understanding you and what you want every single day. That could wear on a person, right? That could lead a person to throw things or to become very angry or to have, you know, develop a conduct disorder, right? And now we're like layering things on top of each other. But really all that person is trying to do, and the research, and you know this, will show that all any of us are trying to do is just get by where we are, right?
So, exactly.
And so ORCID kids are often, they're often identified by their bad behavior, and we can put that in quotes, right? Mm-hmm. But really that behavior is an adaptive response to an environment that really doesn't suit them, and that isn't good for them. And so I always think, you know, it's incumbent on us, the adults, to like take a look at that environment and make changes if we can.
Yes. And I think the other end of the spectrum of kids who have these big explosive outbursts are the introverted, shy, quiet, mm-hmm. reserved mm-hmm. kids. And then I also look at those kids and go, what is going on that they're so afraid to speak
yes.
up and say, I'm hungry or I'm uncomfortable or I'm overstimulated, I'm overwhelmed?
Yeah, we have in our Raising ORCID Kid parent classes, we call those the first set, we call them the exploders, and the second set, we call them the imploders. Mm. They're the ones, yeah, they get real quiet. And that is even more, I don't know, alarming to me, because mm-hmm. they're not causing behavior problems, right? Those are a lot of times they're girls, mm-hmm. You know, that we're socializing girls to be quiet and be mm-hmm. good and all of that thing. And then they're internalizing that. And so they're not causing problems, but they're also not participating and they're on shutdown mode.
Yes.
No less so than a child who's knocking over all of the blocks at school or tearing up the homework or stomping out of the room.
Right. And to be quote unquote helpful means to stay quiet and let mm-hmm. other people go first, right? Mm-hmm. And to not add to the chaos. Mm-hmm. And so then there are kids that grow up, like you said, a lot of them girls, right? We see a lot of women now who are overly helpful and overly quiet, and it's at their own expense, but they're feeling so stressed out inside.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. No, did you want to add something there?
No, go ahead.
I want to dive right into my favorite topic, the ACEs, the acute mm-hmm. childhood experiences. And really, it's only after I had my own children and having worked with children of all backgrounds that I really started to pay attention. And for me, I first learned about it through a TED Talk by Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris and her book and her incredible work. And for listeners that don't know, she's a pediatrician and California Surgeon General. I mean, you should look her up. Incredible. But there are people that came before her as well and people that are currently at the forefront of talking about just the importance of early childhood experiences and mm-hmm. how that manifests itself into chronic illness and mm-hmm. adulthood, right? And well-being, lifestyle, personality, all of that. In your experience, in your background, what role does toxic stress play in a child's physiological development?
That's such a great question. And I'll come at it from the speech and language piece of things, because that's what I see most of. But when we have a child who's got a developmental disability that includes a speech and language disability, so autism, late talking, a severe articulation disorder where they're speaking in complete sentences and no one can understand them, right? Mm-hmm. To be stressed over long periods of time, number one, you will develop coping strategies, mm-hmm. right? Many of which are undesirable, right?
So yes.
You kick and you throw and you scream and you throw yourself on the floor at the blink of an eye because you know, and listen, there's strategy here, right? Mm-hmm. If I already know, because 150,000 times before today, no one has understood what I said, I'm not stupid. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to change tacks. So I've noticed that when I throw myself on the floor, somebody gives me what I need. And that causes a temporary resolution to my stress. I'm going to do that because it's a lot faster and easier than doing it the other way. And so the main thing I'd say to answer your question in my practice in response to toxic stress is kind of this fretful behavioral means of communicating that they're upset. But certainly, and maybe you can speak to this more so than I can, there are nutritional effects on chronic stress. There are motor effects. There are learning effects. Because when we're in stress and we've got a bunch of cortisol and adrenaline running around our systems, we are not learning. And this is sometimes what we forget is that when a child is upset, right, and they're in that fight, flight, or freeze state, they are unavailable for connection, for learning, for talking, for thinking, right? They are in, I'm surviving this moment mode. And so if that's happening like a lot and over a course of time, then eventually what happens is those stress levels just, they live there. That becomes their baseline. And then, you know, we get decreased academic performance, or we get decreased verbal ability, or, you know, sort of, it doesn't look real good.
Right. And just this morning, actually, and I've really listened to a lot of his talks, is Dr. Gabor Mate, who I think is absolutely profound. Mm-hmm. But the way he explains it, and you said it so beautifully too earlier, is it's not what happened to you, but what has happened within you in order to adapt to your surroundings. And we know we're talking about sensitive children, but this goes for all children because their growth and development is happening at such a rapid rate. And then if they're also on top of that in survival mode and the cortisol, and like you said, all of those things, it affects every single part of your body, whether it's cardiac or your immune system, your brain, everything. And so those are the things that we need to be looking at. And that's why I want to ask you about trauma-informed care for everyone who works with children, but also caregivers, because they are raising those children. What does that mean and how important is that?
That is a term that is, I think, on the rise because – And again, I'm no expert in trauma-informed care. And I could stand to do a lot more learning on it. I think the simplest way I can put it is be aware that the things that you're asking of a client in particular, but of a child in general, might put them into a state of fight, flight, or freeze, from which, you know, which is the state in which we, in which trauma occurs. And so anything that we are asking them to do, particularly when we're asking them to do new things, can trigger this response. And we need to be aware of that. And we need to know how to de-escalate. This is like a nervous system problem, right? But it's a short circuit. That's based on past experience. And so if we're unaware that that can happen, that's a problem. I think that's, you know, kind of the quick and dirty.
Yeah. And I mean, you're right. Like, this is such a big topic, but I'm glad that people are talking about it. Going back to that speech development, it's stutter. I find that particular, you know, I know adults who stutter, mm-hmm. and a few of them that I've talked to will think back at a time when they were a child, mm-hmm. and this very dramatic, traumatic experience happened. And from that moment on, they developed a stutter. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, it's in the literature, you will find sort of psychogenic stuttering, which is what it sounds like you're referring to. In other words, something happened and then I stuttered. It's likely that number one, those kids are orchids. Number two, right, that they were already sensitive. And so they're having kind of it's like a neurological short circuit that manifests as a stutter. So what's interesting to me about that as a clinician is good therapy would sort of get back at that and try to unwind, rework, rewire that response to pressure. And in point of fact, what's interesting about stuttering therapy in particular, which is again not on the docket for today, but the goal of stuttering therapy as I was taught it, and there are different schools of thought on this, is not to stutter less, it's to stutter better. And only it's only when we accept that we might stutter and are willing to allow the stutter to occur that the stuttering actually usually goes away, and or doesn't affect us.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you're not fighting it. You're
exactly
sort of pausing and reflecting, allowing it to happen.
Yeah,
and then moving and forward.
Exactly, and when necessary. And I'll give you an example here. One might pause like that, mm-hmm. and just stay in the moment for a second, and let it happen, rather than trying to, think of different words to say or use a filler. Those kinds of things. And all of a sudden, you become very aware of all of the ums in one speech. But that's. So I guess, the short answer to your question is yes, stuttering can occur from something that's traumatic. That's not a terribly common thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's talk about our ORCID kits. So we know there are certain basic requirements, like we mentioned, for children to thrive, but specifically ORCID kits can teach us so much more about being in tune. What are some ways we can support them to be at their best self?
Oh, thank you for asking me this question. So you're right that things that work for ORCID kids are things that all kids need. Let's start with regular and a lot of sleep. ORCID kids, as a general rule, are more sensitive to variations in their routines, in their lives, in different things that are happening. And we all know from experience that having enough sleep can really help you deal with that stuff. Everybody remembers moving out of their first apartment, and you were packing till 2 a.m. That's not when you do your best work. And if we're asking, children to be in the world and learn all of the things, I mean, think about it. They like arrive on the planet and they have no idea how things work here. They're learning all the time. And that's a big job. Most kids' brains are equipped for that. But when we have kids who are overloaded by all of the things that they have to do, sleep is key. Nutrition is another one. Many, many ORCIDs are picky eaters. Many ORCIDs have sensory processing issues. And so eating is hard for them. So figuring out good nutrition, good eating habits, exposure, all of that baseline. Sleep, nutrition, emotional literacy and processing. Are we allowing our ORCIDs to feel all their feelings, or are we shutting them down because we are uncomfortable? Mm. And this is like the work of every parent.
Yes.
To watch your hot mess of a child having a big response and be like, wow, this is really freaking me out right now. What's going on? And often it's, they're triggering some childhood trauma of ours.
Yes. That one is huge. And I've watched it in myself and in others. And I'm like, here it comes, right? Like I could see the person and you can feel yourself just getting angrier. And it has nothing to do with the moment per se, because that's right. Going to come and go in a matter of a few seconds. It might feel like it's forever.
That's right.
But it's all of your own work that needs to be done.
Yeah. I think, structure, that's the other one I wanted to say. ORCIDs benefit from a lot of structure. So when, as regards sleep, that means same bedtime every night, even on the weekends, same wake up time, even on the weekends, TV screen time rules that are consistent, right? Routines that are consistent. If not, we do this every day, you know, on this day, this happens, and on this day, something else happens, and I know about it in advance. So advanced preparation. I'll give you an example of sort of how this works for orchids. I had a little guy who was really having difficulty on the weekends, in the morning getting dressed and going outside. And so I started to sort of poke around and say, well, okay, so how does it work during the week? Do you have problems during the week? They said, no. What's the routine? Well, we get up, we get dressed, we have breakfast, we go outside. Great. What's the routine on the weekends? We get up, we lounge, we have breakfast,
yep.
And then he will never get dressed to go outside. And the reason I'm emphasizing that is because we made one tiny change, which was on the weekend, you're going to get up, get dressed, and then you can lounge and have breakfast and do whatever you want, but he's going to be dressed. And that tiny change in the routine, in the order, made all the difference for this kid. He just needed to know and experience that sameness, that order, that predictability, to know, to feel sort of good in his own skin.
Yeah. And would you say the kids that push back the most to the routines and the structure and the predictability are the ones that need it even more?
That's an excellent question. I don't know the answer. I suspect it would vary depending on the kid. And I think it also varies as to how bought in parents are. We bring orchids, by and large, by nature, by way of them being very sensitive, orchids are very sensitive to the nonverbal messaging that we as parents and adults are broadcasting. And adults, by and large, are not at all sensitive to this, right? We take people at face value and, you know, at our own detriment, actually. But orchids are real tuned into this nonverbal channel. So if you've got a parent who's doing the routine because they like heard it was a good thing to do, but they're not really invested,
mm-hmm.
orchids are going to pick up on that and they're right. going to push back.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, the other piece of that is it's kids' jobs to, it is the, in fact, their job to push against boundaries mm-hmm. and it's our job to hold them.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody has to be mad about it, or we don't have to be mad about it. They're entitled to their feelings. But that's actually how they learn about safety, is by pushing against a boundary and being like, well, is this one going to move? Like, how about now? How about now? And knowing, you know, when parents hold boundaries, children experience a feeling of safety,
mm-hmm.
even though they're pissed off about it at times.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, now with back to school, a lot of families are struggling with the transition back to school or starting school. And of course, you work with orchid kids, highly sensitive children, and they're really, really struggling. So there's a mm-hmm. lot of pushback. And the parents feel like, my gosh, it's endless tantrums when they come home. Why is it me? What's happening at school? They're happy there. They're not happy at home. They don't want to go to school. What's happening there? Why are we seeing these very difficult transitions from home to school?
Yeah. So the way I like to picture it is from the child's perspective. So we send children to school, and for 6 hours, we're asking them to do the following. Pay attention to this, not that. Listen to me, not them. Go over here, not over there. Sit down, stand up, make a line, wait. Look over here again. It's too loud. It's too quiet. You're doing the wrong thing. Look, you should be doing this other thing. No, 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 no. I said you needed to be doing... Okay, can you feel the stress happening right now?
Yes. Yes, my heart rate is starting to spike. My cortisol level is rising. Yes.
Okay. Then we get home. So all day we're bottling that anxiety. We the kids now, right? I'm being the kid. And now we get home to our safe place. And that's the place where we know it's safe to let it all out. And so guess what we do? We pitch a fit. Mm-hmm. We demand to have – now we're doing it to our parent, right? The things that were done to us at school, we're now doing to our caregiver. I wanted the blue cup, not the red cup. You never listened to me. I wanted you to put it on the right side, not on the left side. And I said I wanted peanut butter and blueberry jelly, not grape.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're just – they're just processing what they've experienced all day. And the sad part is we often take it personally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would encourage anybody who's a parent who's listening to this, who's experiencing after school woes, number one, put some food in their mouths when you get them, right? Because let's keep their blood sugar elevated. Mm-hmm. But don't take it personally. It has nothing to do with you. You weren't there.
Right. Right. That's a big one, I think, and that's something I've come to learn too, is it's not personal. It's not about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we feel like if we hold a boundary or if we upset our child, and that's kind of a thought error right there, but we'll leave it there for a second, that somehow our relationship is going to suffer. Mm-hmm. And nothing could be further from the truth, right? That relationship is fundamental to our human experience. The parent-child relationship, the primary caregiver to child experience, is fundamental to their survival. Mm-hmm. And so and speaking of ORCID kids and adverse childhood experiences, right? Like even the most abused children will stand by their primary caregivers, mm-hmm. which is horrifying, and I wish that would never happen, but it is a testament to the strength of that bond, right?
Yes.
And so when we're taking it personally after school, we make a mistake. And when we're fearing that, you know, because they're upset at us and screaming, I hate you, that somehow that's damaging our relationship with them. No, it's not.
Right. And going back to that understanding your own trigger, what is it about the meltdown and the tantrum and the language that's bothering you so much? Because for them, it's just a moment. But for you, it's years and years of events, right?
Oh my gosh. You know, I say this about kids don't learn to hold a grudge until we teach them how. Mm. So when my kids were little, there were a few times, not a lot, because I had fairly easy children when they were younger. But I will say there were a few times they went to bed screaming their bloody heads off because they wanted to stay up and I didn't allow it. And I was like, it's bedtime. You need to stay in your bed. And we marched them back 15 times if necessary, you know, that whole thing. And as upset as they were, when they drifted off to sleep, finally, after whatever, however long it was, when they wake up in the morning, it's over. And it's over until or unless I bring it back up. Mm-hmm. And there's really no need for that because it's finished.
Right. And it's more of a life lesson for us, right, than it is totally. For them, because they're just children. They're going through the motions.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Speaking of life lessons, actually, so – the hardest job of being a parent, but I feel the most rewarding part of being a parent is actually how much our children can teach us about life and ourselves and relationships. We hear the word conscious awareness a lot, but how do we actually practice that every day? We know everything is baby steps, and we know we have to do our work in order to have improved relationships and just, you know, not only be good people, but feel good every day. How do we become more conscious and self-aware as caregivers and open ourselves up to our children being our biggest teachers?
I love this question. ORCIDs are by far they're our shortcut to consciousness and awareness on the part of parents. And what I often tell people is if you've got an ORCID, you are learning much earlier than most how to observe the person who lives in your house, you know, your child, mm-hmm. to observe them as a separate but yet connected being who is worthy of your respect and your attention. And you're noticing, and this is where the awareness comes in, you're noticing how they are in the world. And so this, you can do this when you're troubleshooting, but you can also just do this when you're playing. One of the things I often have people do, parents do, is just hang back and watch and ask yourself, what is the game here? So for autistic kids, what this often looks like is they'll be holding a car and moving it back and forth. And I'll ask parents, what's the game here? And they'll say, well, he's playing with the car. And I say, hang on, no, we're making the wheels move, right? So there's a level of granularity that you can get to when you're really being consciously aware of what's happening in a moment. And I think that's the place where everything kind of settles into the groove. That's where you are going to feel most connected to your child. That's where your child is going to feel most connected to you, because nobody's making any demands. We're just being together.
Right. And there's nothing about parenting you can fake, right? That's the other part of it. Like you can put on something when you leave your home, but the minute you come back, it's your kids that will mirror you, right? The conversations they have with other children and their siblings are basically the conversations that you've had with them.
Oh, there's no question. And yes. Then talk about the energetics too, right?
Yes.
You can paste a smile on your face and say, it's fine. But guess what they're getting?
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And that's why I love talking to children. I know, and I always worry, what are my kids telling other people? But I also love talking with other children because it's very telling of their life experiences and how they're interpreting the world and the conversations that are had at home.
Yes.
So, yeah. That's the beauty of childhood.
Yeah.
For other people, I guess, right? Not when it comes to our own children. Gabrielle, something I still to this day will always say, I feel that raising children in this generation really is the hardest it's ever been. Because not only are there these external pressures and, you know, we're just still going through a pandemic, but mental health challenges now being, I mean, they're calling that an epidemic. And then having to do your own work. And it's a lot, right, for caregivers. What are some of those qualities and characteristics that we really want to remind ourselves and we really want to practice every day? Because at the end of the day, our ultimate goal is to have a deeper connection with our children.
Such a juicy question. I think the first thing is we cannot model how to take care of others, which is something that we often think we want to model for our children. Like we want them to be empathetic and kind and all of that. We cannot show them or teach them how to do that unless we're being kind to ourselves. And I am holding back the word self-care right now, but being kind to oneself, talking nicely to oneself, is a skill that not very many people have. That internal voice, it turns out, often comes from our parents. So guess what? If you're a parent, you're probably doing this to your child also. Mm-hmm. And I just think, you know, it's a beautiful mess of past and present all woven into one and future. But I think finding some kindness for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm. What's like a, this might sound, but what's like an easier way to do that? I changed from easy to easier, but give me an example of, you know, what in a typical day for most people, what's the moment that they can choose to practice that?
I mean, I highly recommend doing it either the minute you wake up, and I would ground it in a bodily, in a physical sensation. So sometimes when I wake up, for example, I feel the sheets around me. I feel the air outside of the bed. And I think, this feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so just kind of, you know, call it a gratitude practice, if you will, but just a moment of like, I exist, I'm here. And then all the stuff comes up, like, I got to take the car to the thing and I got to meet a million people and I'm probably going to be late for this other thing, right? But even just setting yourself up for that moment of appreciation. At Raising Orchid Kids, actually, in the parent class that we run, we start every week with wins. And this is very difficult for parents when they first arrive.
Mm.
We ask them what's something that went well this week, and they really struggle. So maybe that's the answer to your question, is find something that is going or has gone well and just call it to mind.
Mm. Something that I've started using, I guess it's in line with gratitude and mindfulness and being present, is serendipity. So before I would feel myself feel certain things like, oh, I have to say take the dog for a walk or go grocery shopping or I got to do this, right? But then I tell myself sometimes, right, it's not always practical, but what if I just let it happen? I'm not resisting. I'm not fighting. And maybe something good will come out of it. And it's amazing to me, like, for example, like, oh, I have to take the dog for a walk. I'm exhausted. But it's on that dog walk that I met some awesome person that I connected with. Yeah. Or I'll sign up for something and I'm like, gosh, it's one more thing I did and, you know, I should have done this. But then again, I end up having this conversation that that stays with me, for example, in a good way. So I'm feeling like the less I resist and push back, sometimes there's beauty in the moment too.
That is Argavan, I think that's probably the key to everything. So much of the behavior, and again, in air quotes, that comes from children comes from our resistance to whatever it is that they're doing. And that's not to say that we shouldn't have boundaries. We absolutely should. It's not to say that we shouldn't prevent children from pulling, you know, from touching outlets and running in the street. We absolutely should. Mm-hmm. And our resistance to whatever it is that they're throwing at us is the thing that escalates everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and we can't fight them anyway, right? If there's anything I've learned as a parent is you can't. They can win if they want to every time because you feel so raw and unfiltered and exposed.
Yeah,
and
right.
So it's just you versus you, which is a lose-lose any time of day. So that's you right. Might as well, right, shift that's your right. thinking and mindset. It's amazing the things like our kids make us do, but, you know, let's not tell them how much power they have over us because that's scary too, right?
Well, right. And listen, we can, right. I mean, back to resistance, right? We can resist those lessons or we can embrace them. And so what's going to serve you best? What's going to make you happier? What's going to make your household happier? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe choose that.
Yeah. And that goes with, I think, every aspect of life too, whether it's work, relationships, school, community, anywhere really.
Yeah.
We're having such an awesome conversation. If we have to really summarize, like, what are these essential skills, go-to strategies for all parents and caregivers to raise well-balanced, confident, resilient children who become those as adults? What are those, Gabrielle?
Oh, gosh. You're like asking me all the things.
I saved them just for you, by the way.
I love to think about this. This is what I spend my time thinking about. This is so fun for me. I think it's predictability that shows, because predictability will show me as a child that the world is a safe place to be. And when I feel safe, then I can do all of the things that I want to do. I feel safe to explore because I know there's a backstop. And I think that's where we want our kids to live.
Mm-hmm. And with predictability comes routine, right? Which that's I know right. we all thrive on as well. Like when we feel like we have to get back to our routine, it's because we're feeling unsettled and we need to get back there again.
Yeah. And I often hear people in my head saying, but the routine, it's like, okay, yes. We have this love-hate relationship with the routine. And there are going to be moments in your life, you know, back to resistance. There's going to be moments in your life where the routine rules. And then there's going to be moments in your life where you take a break from the routine. And knowing how and when to do that gracefully, particularly with orchid kids who really have trouble navigating, you know, non-routine times, you know, summer vacation can feel really awful for many orchid kids, and school can, as much as they're maybe melting down afterwards, it can feel really good to have that predictability sometimes too. I think knowing when, you know, knowing your child, knowing when they're able to shift into a less structured or more structured. And I think this is, you know, parenting by its nature is an exercise in adaptation, right? Because as soon as kids have mastered one stage of development, they're on to the next. It's constantly changing.
Mm-hmm. And would you say more or less those tools and strategies that you apply when you have younger children or work with younger children will apply for older teens and young adults?
No, actually.
Okay.
So I have older teens in my house right now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm speaking mostly from personal experience here. The thing about it, well, okay. The overall theory is the same. Kids need a safe-sized container in which to experiment. When you're two, that means all the breakable stuff is away from you and you don't touch cords or run in the street. That's pretty much the size of the container, right? Mm-hmm. And the yard is fenced in. Okay. When you're 17, that container needs to look a lot like, hopefully it looks a lot like the adult world with maybe a couple of, constraints / caveats. Right. And so yes, it's similar in as much as there's still a container there, mm-hmm. but what's inside the container is a lot more complex, a lot more nuanced because they're a lot closer to adulthood. The ways in which you describe, so for example, a 17-year-old might be allowed to use the car, but might have to be home at a certain time. But the way you're going to go about that is not, you can use the car at 11 o'clock on Saturday and you must be home at 12 o'clock on Sunday. That is maybe not such a respectful way to talk to a 17-year-old. It's a perfectly excellent way to talk to a toddler. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
So, it just gets more complex.
Yeah. So you're building that foundation when they're young and hoping as they get older, they're falling back on that solid foundation. I mean, that's hopefully the goal anyway.
That's exactly right. And as they demonstrate competence and confidence, you can enlarge that container. This again comes down to like knowing who your child is, right? Because there are kids who are ready to, I live in a city, mm-hmm. take the bus to school by themselves, the city bus to school by themselves in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And there are kids who really aren't. And it's not that, all fifth graders should take the bus. That's just not how it is. It's like this one, yeah, is ready and this one isn't. Okay, fine.
Mm-hmm. So knowing your child.
Totally.
Yeah. Gabrielle, you have such a great platform where you interview other guest experts and you do a lot of talks, which I love. Where can our listeners find about that and more about you?
They can go to speechkids.com for all the interviews and all things, child development related. They can also get to the Raising Orchid Kids website from there, which is raisingorchidkids.com.
Awesome. And I will include all of those in the show notes, as well as those things that we talk throughout our conversation. Gabrielle, whenever we chat, it's never enough. And I want to say,
glad we're chatting next week.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I'm so excited to be on the other side of the mic. And yes. I will definitely share that with our listeners as well. Thank you so much again for being here.
Thank you for having me, Argaban. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. And going back to that, knowledge and support really give parents and caregivers power. Mm-hmm. And I hope that those listening today are feeling empowered from our conversation. So thank you for being a huge part of that, Gabrielle.
Thank you.
And to the listeners, thank you as always for tuning in. Until next time. Thank you for listening to the Baby Steps Nutrition Podcast with your host, Argaban Neelforush. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into all the tips and tricks you and your family can use to make daily life a little easier. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, please leave a rating and review, share with others, and follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Baby Steps Nutrition Podcast. As always, you can head over to babystepsnutrition.com to sign up for our email list, as well as check out all the links and resources in the show notes. See you next time. Tune in. Feel great.